This episode comes from my archives. For the most current episodes, please go to germwarfare.com.
This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas. Taras Kobanek, thank you for joining me in the trenches again.
Thank you for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
We were just talking a moment ago, and I need to do this, but I keep getting emails from people saying that I'm very disrespectful when I drink alcohol talking to my guests. Am I being disrespectful?
Only if you don't offer it to your guests, but I guess I'm too far from that.
That is the best response yet. By the way, are you a whiskey drinker?
Not much. I rarely drink something strong. I tried whiskey a few times, probably the easiest strong drink for me was Becherovka from Czech Republic. It's something like 38, and it is with some flowers or whatever. So there is a taste. It's not just vodka.
Oh, so it's okay. So it's a type of vodka.
It's almost as strong as vodka, but it has a taste, and it's more viscose, probably. I mostly liked it for the taste, and it doesn't feel like a lot of alcohol. But usually, I just drink wine or something.
Good man. Wine is good. I'm from South Africa. We have very good wine here.
So I've heard. I don't know that much about South Africa, but yeah, I've heard something about wine.
Well, if you've had French wine, then you're getting there.
Oh.
Listen, I must tell you quickly, my wife and I were in France in 2019, just before all this COVID stuff. And we traveled a bit. We went from the north down to the south. And so one of the things that we always hear is about how amazing French wine and French champagne are. So we bought a whole lot of it. And it wasn't nearly as good as everybody made it out to be. And I bought expensive champagne, and it was very normal. It wasn't. I don't understand. I'm wondering if there's just too much marketing going on.
Most probably there is some marketing there. They have been around for a while. I don't know myself. I'm not that much. I wouldn't call myself a wine taster, although one of my friends from France was trying to introduce me and others to wine, and he even had a great idea of Tour de France. The way they ride on bikes, he was bringing us different wines from different regions and telling us about them, and then we were tasting them, at least for the first 20 minutes or something, because when we were getting to the end of the third bottle, it was no longer about tasting wine, it was just about conversation.
That sounds about right. I approve. Isn't it funny though? You can just imagine the woke people, right, watching us, two white guys talking about drinking wine in France. I'm creating a segue into your story. Well, let's get into it a little bit. For those who don't know, what is your background?
I am an engineer. I started as a network engineer back in the day, and I joined Google in 2016 as a software engineer. I spent 4 years working at Google, and I got fired in 2020 for speaking up against racial politics that were pretty strong at that moment in the company.
You say racial politics. Well, that's a euphemism, because if you look at your document, which is available online, the memo, it's not racial politics, it's anti-white politics. That's what it is.
Yes, although the company doesn't see it that way, and it keeps promoting books like White Fragility that basically condemns white people and so on. But if you just come to someone and start telling them that there are some anti-white politics around, people would be surprised. And I would be surprised if I were someone else. But unfortunately, at the company, it was too much for me to just be silent and content.
So, okay, so tell me the story. What happened?
2020 was obviously not an easy year because of COVID, and then the death of George Floyd in the U.S. That resulted in racial protests in the U.S. And obviously, the topic of race became a very important one, and everyone had to make a decision on which side of this policy, of this topic you are. Do you support, fight for more equality for black people, let's say, for less police violence, as they call it, and so on, or not? And it was dangerous for people and companies not to support this movement. And so the company started supporting it internally. We started getting messages internally from first from the CEO, then from senior vice presidents, from vice presidents, and so on. It was trickling down. And everyone was telling us that we had to educate ourselves about racism and learn about Juneteenth, which is the event of freeing last slaves in the U.S. End of the Civil War. These books like White Fragility kept advertised and so on. And then we were starting getting some talks by black employees producing some slides and talking about racism and so on. And the company had some classes about racism even before that. The company had this Sojourn class that was partially based on the White Fragility book that was teaching people that there are racial discriminations and so on, and that life is difficult for people of color. And but at 2020, it went into overdrive. And as time went by, it became hard to ignore this stuff. And it was too much. For me, it was difficult to ignore for two reasons. First of all, the company kept telling us that racial discrimination was not allowed. And at the same time, was sending us messages literally telling us explicitly that white people should use provided resources to educate themselves and their children. It was hard to see this level of hypocrisy for me. And second, how can you be in a relationship with anyone, with a relationship of any kind, friend relationship, work relationship, with someone who is inconsistent and you don't know what to expect of that someone? And that was the case with the company, because if you do not know what the company would do, how can you plan your life, your future with the company and so on? So it bothered me, and it wasn't the first topic, because all these politics had been in pretty prominent at Google even before 2020, namely sexual politics around oppression of women by men, gender politics that straight people oppress LGBTQ plus whatever members and so on. And the racial set of politics was just a part of that. And I knew people disagreeing with this, but people were generally reluctant to talk about this because everyone was afraid how it might go and whether you might lose your job and so on. And at some point I got tired and I decided to list my thoughts on this and to share them inside of the company. I wrote it, and even before that, my manager, for example, was asking me what my concerns were. And we had such conversations inside of the team because others were worried as well by these topics. And my manager was kept telling me that he was going to collect some information and send them basically upstairs for people to make some decision. So I decided to make it easier for myself to somewhat organize my thoughts by writing them down, and also to help my manager to provide them to provide the manager with my thoughts in a written form, so he wouldn't have to write them himself. And I wrote a document in which I listed my thoughts on a number of topics, a number of things happening around, and I was trying to explain why these things were wrong. And as soon as I shared it with my team, my manager, and some other people inside the company, my manager started pressuring me into removing the document, issuing apologies for non-specified people for even writing the document. And I kept saying no, and it ended up with a meeting with an HR where I was given an ultimatum to delete the document in 30 minutes. And I did ask two questions. First, if they didn't want, if they did see the document as offensive in some way, then was it possible for me to make any changes they wanted to make it non-offensive while having the document around to have some conversation? And they said, no, you cannot edit it, you have to delete it. And the second question of mine was, what would be my other way to express my concerns and to do something about this? And they told me, oh, when you delete the document, we might connect you to someone you might be able to talk to about this topic and so on. And as it appeared, they were ready to fire me, but they had no idea about this other possibility of getting me in contact with someone. So it didn't look sincere. So I refused that demand and they fired me on spot. And they deleted the internal version of the document in like a few hours, as far as I was, as far as I'm aware. And later, the company, when I appeared on Fox News, the company provided an official statement to Fox News that I definitely wasn't fired for writing this or any other document, which was at best an incorrect information. Maybe it was a result of one hand of the company having no idea what the other was doing, or some miscommunication. But in my written warning that I had received at the moment of getting fired, the written warning was mostly about me writing the document and about the ultimatum for me to remove the document. And they were they were issuing a statement about it not being related to the document at all.
it's just unbelievable. Did they fire you on the spot on that day? You couldn't come to work the next day?
They removed my accesses in like half an hour. And that is totally understandable because if you have an employee who is a big trouble for your company, you don't want to fire that employee and then allow that employee to come and maybe cause more damages. So it's cheaper for the company to just isolate you, to keep paying you during the notice period, but not allowing you any access to internal stuff. I totally understand that. That didn't bother me that much. It was a reasonable action by the company. The way it went before they fired me and how they acted later after firing me, that what disappointed me.
Disappointed. You are being so careful with your words. I think what you're trying to say is that's what pissed you off.
To a degree, yes.
But tell me something. If they put out a statement, it was you're talking about your show. It was the Tucker Carlson show that you went on to.
Yes.
You said Google put out a statement saying that that wasn't the reason why you were fired. What was the reason then?
Everyone can check that statement on the Fox News website. And they basically said that, no, it wasn't about a document. It was about me being a terrible employee and a co-worker. They mentioned several warnings issued to me. They mentioned me singling out someone. I still have no idea what they meant by that. My best guess would be that the internal version of my document contained a name of one employee, simply because the document talks about a couple of articles in the Daily Insider. That's a daily newsletter inside of the company. And one of these articles was about black vice president who got caught in the shooting in YouTube offices. I don't remember, it was 2019 or something like that. And the story was that she had experienced a bad treatment by the police in the past. So when she got stuck in at the office during that shooting and the police came to sweep the office, she was afraid to go out to meet the police. So when, as far as I understand, when the police comes, you're supposed to reveal yourself and then to get out of the building or something like that. And she was afraid because according to the article, she was afraid that the police would be racist and with her being black, it would mean them maybe shooting her on spot or something like that. And I can totally understand the reluctance. I would have no idea how to reveal myself to the police looking for an active shooter in my building or whatever. But be it her view of the situation or the way the company decided to present the situation to us, it was the police, basically the police at the offices were potentially racist, and so it was hard for a black woman to reveal herself. And that article in the Daily Insider had the name of this employee and a photo of this employee and was telling a story of that employee. So it didn't matter much if I mentioned that name internally, linking to that article in the Daily Insider. But when I released my document provided an external version of the document much later, I removed that name because it didn't matter who that happened to, and I didn't want it to be personal in any way. Maybe that's what they meant by me singling someone out. If not, I really have no idea what that was about. As for numerous warnings, I had a numerous meetings with HR and my manager in the past, and all these meetings where I was asking them what they wanted me to do during these meetings, and they kept telling me, "We are not telling you not to do something. It's up to you. We're just providing you with feedback on how things are perceived, like how your actions are perceived inside of the company, and then it's up to you how to act." And I kept pushing, like, okay, let's imagine that I do the same stuff 10 times more. What your response would be? am I allowed to do that? And the answer was very non-specific, like, oh, that has to be evaluated on case-by-case basis, and it might fall in the whole range from a conversation to the contract termination or whatever, so they were not specific at all. And the only time when I was told about getting a warning was in the meeting before getting fired. It was about the written warning they were going to tell, to give me. So I'm not sure why they said that I had like 7 or 11 warnings or something, but I guess the company can represent staff in that way. They can probably make it look like those were official warnings.
What were some of those meetings you had with HR? I mean, if they weren't happy with your quote-unquote behavior, what were they talking about?
They were telling. They were talking about people reporting me to HRs, and people not being happy with
about
my
what?
Words. My first experience with HR with that happened, I believe it was something like spring 2018, and I got into a conversation on the internal board regarding the white fragility. Book and because there was the author of White Fragility, Robin DiAngelo, got invited to give a speech on premises in one of Google offices in the US, and it was my first. It was the first time I saw that book. This mention of the idea of white fragility, which is basically. If you are white, then you inherently racist. And if you are being told about being racist and you are not comfortable with that and you try to resist, this is a sign of white fragility, which basically says that if I tell you that you are racist and you agree with me, then you are racist. And if you disagree with me, then you have white fragility and you are a racist. There is no good way out of this book. And I was so confused by Google denying people like Jordan Peterson, for example, a chance to speak on the premises, but inviting Robin DiAngelo, and others were surprised as well. And we kept discussing this on the internal mailing list. And there was a number of things in that discussion that got me reported. Some people were reporting me for allegedly denying existence of racism because I kept saying that, no, what you call racism doesn't look like racism to me, and it might be other things, and let's look into this and so on. Because nowadays you can be called racist for liking some food or not liking some food, and the bar is so low that it just doesn't make sense. The other thing that got me reported was a mention of lectures by Jordan Peterson, not even his speeches, but lectures on the Maps of Meaning, his YouTube series on Bible and generally on mythology.
It's fantastic.
Well, he uses it as a source of huge inspiration, and he comes with all the ideas that, to me, they look like they lie too far from the original material, but it is fascinating how he gets there from that material and how he ties everything together. And at some point, one employee wrote something like, if only I knew why people act the way they do. And it could have been a sarcastic remark, but I decided that, oh, maybe it's useful to look into psychology and whatever. And I would say that I could have recommended some other lectures nowadays, but back then I only was familiar with this set of lectures by Jordan Peterson. So I decided to recommend them. And immediately someone got offended because, oh, my sibling is a trans. Sorry, I'm already not sure because there is apparently something that you, it is fine to use trans as a noun, but not as adjective or the other way around. So you can say that someone is trans, but you cannot say someone is whatever. So there are some nuances that can get you into trouble, whatever. And someone got offended simply by me mentioning Jordan Peterson. Like, oh, my sibling is a trans, and now you mention this terrible, terrible person who is known for disrespecting trans people. And I got reported for basically for advising someone to check online lectures by Jordan Peterson because it was Jordan Peterson. And
it's unbelievable.
Yes, it would be surprising to me had I been on the outside of the company, but it is weird what kind of things can get you reported. And then I can totally understand that the company doesn't want to get into trouble because of your actions. So they try to push responsibility onto employees all the time. That's why we get yearly mandatory trainings on how to behave and so on. So if anything, the company could tell us, but you knew, you certified that you were aware.
But you know what doesn't make sense to me is that I'm guessing the majority of management at Google is white.
It's hard for me to say. I don't remember. They have some stats on diversity, and they these stats are probably external because the whole all the efforts on diversity now are to be advertised as widely as possible. I don't know whether all of the how many people in the management are white. Though at some point we had a moment when basically the top management was on the stage at once. And I believe it was something like 3 or 4 women, something like 3 or 4 men from with some Indian or Asian background, and something like 7 probably more white men, so around 20 people total. And so, yes, there are probably a significant part of the management is white, but at least in my chain of command, the CEO is of the Indian origin. Our senior vice president is of an Indian origin. Our vice president was, I believe, of Chinese origin or something like that. Out of 3 vice presidents responsible for our office in Switzerland, 2 were from Middle East, I believe.
I get the impression that they would consider Martin Luther King as racist because he said, "I have a dream that people will be judged based on the content of their character and not on the color of their skin."
Yes, and we are not moving into that direction anymore. And people call for explicitly call for noticing color of the skin and providing some safe places for black people specifically or something like that.
And you know what else is weird, Taras, is that... Sorry, I think I interrupted you, but...
No.
Everything. You know what else is weird? Is that the whole concept of this white fragility... providing safe spaces for black people, etc. The whole concept is inherently racist. Because what it's suggesting is that white people are so superior and so powerful that they just happen to oppress by virtue of being white. They just, if there's a black person, oh, I'm just going to oppress that black person, you know. Black people don't have a chance around white people. That's what they're actually saying.
If we are to ask someone, some of these activists, and they would be able to refine their thoughts, it would probably be something like, There is some kind of institutional racism right now that prohibits black people and other people of color from being successful and so on. And the world we live in is built on slavery from the past. And the life was so hard for black people and other color people of other colors back in the day that they are at a disadvantage right now, and they require some help to be on the same level as white people. And I can understand it to a degree, but then they mix everything because there are black people that are way more successful than other white people and so on. And but they want to look at everyone at once as a race, as a sex, gender, whatever.
It's all the same.
Instead of trying to pay attention to individuals and to difficulties, because everyone has its own difficulties, and it would be nice to fix a lot of this stuff. And there are probably some solutions, but if you start looking at, if you start explaining all difficulties by some racial injustices and whatever, you might be right to a degree, but you are going to be missing so much stuff that I don't think you would be able to come up to, with a good solution.
Well, I don't understand this inherently racist thing either. I mean, okay, so Obama was at one stage the most powerful man in the world, right? He's not white. And the majority of people, of Americans, voted for him. How does that happen if the country is so inherently racist? And for that matter, is Obama oppressed by white people?
I am not even sure how they explain that. There is probably some explanation that it was a huge effort by all people of freedom or whatever. But
they're gonna be doing gymnastics with their words.
Oh, they have been doing that for quite a while, and they keep doing that, looks like, in all general. And my understanding is that all this became worse during Obama. I'm not sure if it was heard that it was connected to his speeches, and I understand that it is beneficial for any politician to come up with some idea of an enemy, or maybe an enemy is a too big word, but some adversary that you unite your electoral base in the presence of that adversary. And my understanding is that Obama was using this idea of racial injustice to some degree. I am not that much of an expert there. But and I'm familiar with this approach because I'm from Ukraine, and even before the invasion, Russian invasion in 2014, for a long time, our politicians had been playing this game because they were basically pitting Western Ukraine versus Eastern Ukraine, rural, agricultural, pro-European versus industrial, more Russian-speaking, more pro-Soviet Union, which results in being basically pro-Russian nowadays. And the politicians were getting benefits from that. And it, why it wasn't the reason for the invasion, it certainly did make the invasion easier and provide Russia with justifications back then. Because after years of such politics, people in Crimea, they were, I think they were honestly scared of people from the Western Ukraine really coming to Crimea and starting ethnic cleansings or whatever. So they were meeting Russian troops with an open arms. And so they were glad to have Russians there. And they were basically blocking Ukrainian army. Not that the Ukrainian army was very decisive at that moment, because the president had had escaped the country, didn't have a working government. Nobody was able to make a decision back then. It was kind of chaos. And on top of that, you had citizens of Ukraine basically blocking Ukrainian troops in military bases. And these troops had no idea what to do, because if they tried to get out of military bases, they would be doing something bad to these blockades by citizens. And I am afraid that if we keep playing such games in the West, Ukraine is a small country, and many people don't even know where it is, probably on the map. But if we keep playing similar things, like pitting people against each other on a larger scale, that is going to weaken the whole, whatever you call it, Western civilization, European civilization, North American, and that would open it for all kinds of attacks. And basically, this Russian invasion is partially one of these attacks, because Putin is probably sees West as weak and corrupt, corrupt in the sense that not just that it can be bought with money, though Putin has been doing that for quite a while, and but also in the sense of losing the understanding of what is important and what is not, and focusing on all these racial politics, yes, and so on, instead of focusing on actual problems to solve. And that weakens everyone, and I'm not looking forward to drastic world changes that might come out of this.
You make some very, very good points. And what it shows is that the real class war is not between white and black, but it's between people like us and those in power.
Probably, but this framing would mean that there is some set of elites that control everything and so on, and it sounds like a conspiracy theory, so I'm not very fond of that approach. And usually it's just a set of bad decisions by not members of some elites, but maybe nominally members, but not because they are members, but because they are people pursuing their own interests. I don't think that Obama was using this rhetoric, anti-white rhetoric, to make it easier for some elites. It was probably to secure his own place and organize his own voters or whatever. And when we keep, when this keeps happening, and when different people keep doing bad decisions and basically sacrificing future of everyone in order to get some personal benefits, we keep getting deeper into this unfortunate setup.
Yeah, I mean, I've got your memo in front of me, and we spoke about it actually on my TNT show, so we don't have to go through it again. And I'll add it, you know, under this video when it's online. But it is interesting when you think about slavery. You mentioned slavery. Now, in front of me, I've got some data here. Right, listen to this. This is now the Global Slavery Index, right? You can look it up. But it says here, Africa has just recorded the highest rate of modern-day enslavement in the world. I'll carry on. Armed conflict, state-sponsored forced labor and forced marriages were the main causes behind the estimated 9.2 million Africans who live in servitude without the choice to do so. And despite these practices being widespread, slavery has remained a largely invisible issue, in part because it disproportionately affects the most marginalized members of society, such as minorities, women, and children. Anyway, the point is this. Imagine if you had to present that data to the same people, you know, at Google and everywhere else, because this woke mindset has permeated Western culture. I have a suspicion that they'll bat it off, they'll dismiss it, they'll make some excuse. But the point is that black people are enslaving black people. And you just heard there, that's the official number, 9.2 million. That's the known number. That's a lot of slaves.
Sure, unfortunately. As for woke people reacting to such data, I assume that they would start thinking how it could have been caused by actions by white people, because that's basically the narrative. When you see something wrong, you are supposed to start thinking, how did white people contribute to this, or males contribute to that, or straight people contribute to that? They are not looking for explanations. They have explanations, yeah. And they are just trying to fit those explanations into any narrative they see. So I would imagine they would start talking about something like, oh, this is a result of colonization and whatever. And had it not been colonization, then Africa would have been a land of freedom and prosperity and peace and whatever.
Yeah, I mean, but again, like I said earlier, that is so inherently racist. They don't see the irony in what they're saying, because what they're suggesting is that the black leaders now in Africa who are enslaving others are just hypnotized or indoctrinated or something. They're not able to think for themselves because of the evil white man possibly before them. But let's turn it around. Under Seretse Khama, who was, in my opinion, one of the greatest African leaders ever, he took over Botswana, I think, in the 1960s. I forget which year it was. And he took that country into the fastest growing economy in the world in a space of 12 years. Are they now going to say it's because of white people?
You attribute everything bad to white people, and then you attribute everything good to people, to talents of people of color.
It's a catch-22. You can't win. Oh man, it's so ridiculous, Taras. So what do we do? I mean, how do what do we do? Do we just laugh it off? Do we talk to people about it? Do we give up? I think you said in the previous conversation that in some instances you just don't even engage.
I don't think that it is possible to convince some people. Or at least I have no idea how to convince them. In some conversations, it's not a matter of logic, because people just start with totally different premises. If they believe that there is white oppression inherently in the US, then all actions like actions by the police are going to be viewed as results of this oppression. You cannot argue with such people and show them data. They would just tell you that maybe not in this case, but in other cases, there is an oppression and so on. And they have no idea how to change the mind of someone. It's probably similar to the conversation that the US has been having for a while with pro-life and pro-choice, mm-hmm. which is based on basically how you see a fetus. Do you see it as a person, or do you see it as some kind of grow inside the body? And then based on that, you are either fine with abortion, or you think it is a bad thing. And no matter of attempts to convince someone, would persuade someone, if you have these two different initial views of this topic. And the similar is with racism and so on. So I don't know how to convince some people and change their minds. I believe that there are a lot of people on the fence that cannot decide. And there are way more people that just don't care about the topic. And this topic might not reach them, but if they are lucky. But there are people that are getting caught into this in the US and all over the world because all your life you have been just honestly working and minding your own business, and then you end up in a situation where you have to pledge allegiance to BLM or to some other narrative. And when you hesitate for a moment, that's a sign of your bigotry, and then you out of job and you are in big trouble. So my hope is that people start understanding, realizing that it might end up badly for various reasons. It might end up badly because of kind of civil war in internally, like colored people versus white, because if it keeps going that direction, what is the outcome? If you say that white people are so irredeemably corrupt that they are racist and they cannot change themselves and they oppress black people, what is the solution then? You have to get rid of white people. At least you have to isolate white people from black people.
I think that's the ultimate goal, actually. When they talk about diversity, they're not actually talking about diversity. They're talking about fewer white people. Because when I talk about diversity, I don't necessarily think about what people look like. I think about the fact that you are an engineer, somebody else might be a pilot, there might be a strip dancer, a pole dancer or whatever, there might be a sportsman. All of those people have different life experiences with different stories to tell. That's pretty diverse, no matter what they look like.
I partially agree, but partially it is a kind of a trap because the left keeps telling us that there is power in diversity and more success in diversity. And if we push for diversity, we're going to be more successful. Yeah. And then some people start asking them, okay, what about diversity of opinions? Why does it have to be just diversity of your looks? Shouldn't we try to get diversity of experiences and so on? And to some extent, it's playing along the same game with that it's going on. You're trying to say basically that, yes, diversity is good, but maybe some slightly different diversity, but diversity is good, and then you're falling into the same narrative.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. That's a fake binary. That's a good point. And for that matter, diversity is not a strength in many respects. Let me give an example. If I go on a tour to Russia and I'm on a bus of 30 people from around the world and all 30 people speak different languages, there's no strength in that because nobody can communicate. The moment I hear somebody speaking English, there's a very good chance that I'm going to find my way to sitting near that person or next to that person because that's a common shared value. It's a common denominator. That's where the strength lies. The diversity of everybody talking different languages is a weakness.
It can even be simplified more. Let's say driving on roads. If there is diversity and you have a choice to drive on the right or on the left and everyone does that, it's going to be a mess.
Yes. Well played. That's very
true. Back to the language. Yes, there is basically the culture. Like each culture is a set of some kind of rules that people follow. And if you think that you share a culture with someone, you kind of understand how that person is going to act. And then it's easier to predict those actions and easier for you to plan your future. Let's say it's safer, less risky. That is why it's easier to deal with someone of your culture, because you when you encounter someone else, you have no idea how that person might act. And Great. In some case, one of the examples was if someone decides to bow when meeting you and you try to extend your hand, that person might just lose an eye because of your finger or whatever. And there are incompatibilities that might not be that bad for you, but something that has to be worked around. But generally, you just don't know how that other person is different. And that's a source of many fears when different cultures encounter each other, then people just afraid of what might happen. Mm. And as they keep dealing with other cultures and they start understanding those other cultures and cultures start affecting each other and somewhat going to becoming more and more similar, and people start understanding what to expect of someone else, even if that someone else is quite different, then I believe that fear goes away, and a lot of what people call racism is not an organized hatred of other people. It's just a fear of unknown, and that fear goes away if you just let people see for themselves and to communicate with each other. And you cannot expect it to go away if you keep pressuring people, calling them racist and shaming them, because then people go into to a defensive state, and instead of just developing, they start defending themselves from you.
That's a very good point. And you're right. Multiculturalism generally is not synonymous with harmony. You'll absolutely find more conflict, because not because people dislike one another, they just simply don't understand how others operate. I come from a Christian upbringing. I don't come from a Muslim upbringing. So my general cultural behavior is different. It's really that simple. It's not about hatred. It's just not understanding. And also sometimes you don't want to be part of the other culture. This is why you'll find Christians will marry Christians, for example, by and large, or an atheist will marry an atheist quite often. You know, if you have a Christian marrying a Muslim, it obviously can work, but I think it also can break apart, and that's simply because of the differences and the lack of understanding of how the other operates.
And I think there have been some studies into how modern-day segregation, not forced segregation, but cultural segregation works in the U.S., that people try to move to those that are more similar to them, and as such, you get these communities around race or some or religion or some idea and so on. So nobody forces people to do that, but it is more comfortable for people to live with those that are more alike, and you end up with some basically boundaries with distinct communities.
Yeah, what's that saying? Borders make the best neighbors.
I don't know where it's coming from, but it might be interpreted in different ways. But generally, even borders inside of a family, basically, you have to have your own space, and people are different, and you want to have some rules, even with people that you like and you live with all your life, simply because it simplifies interactions. Because when there are no rules, no limits, people end up being unhappy because someone ends up intruding into your space and doing something that you really don't like and so on. And a similar stuff works on a bigger scale. I believe that's why the US has states, that every state just has its own set of rules, and you can just select where to live based on these rules that you like and whatever. And it has been working for them for a while, but I just really hope it won't end up working because of all this nonsense right now.
Yeah, I mean, hope. But I think reality is a bit different, isn't it? I live in South Africa, right? Listen to this. We've got 11 official languages, 11, right? Which means that there are at least 11 different, perhaps, cultures, and/slash ethnicities, right? That's very, very difficult to get harmonious. And it's very, yeah, and it's extremely easy. It's extremely easy if you force all of it into each other's space. You're going to get conflict.
I wonder how it compares to India. I might be totally wrong, but my understanding is that they have so many different languages there, like sub-ethnicities and whatever, that many people from India, from different regions, when they talk to each other, they speak English, because otherwise they wouldn't be able to understand. I might be wrong, but that's what I've heard.
Sure. No, I think you're correct. But I think there are other aspects there. For example, India is very big geographically. And also, the variations between the cultural differences, I think, are smaller because most Indians look similar, if that makes sense, as opposed to a Dutch-looking or Dutch-German-looking South African versus perhaps a Zimbabwean, a black native Zimbabwean-looking African. The distance between the culture, I think, possibly is greater. I don't know. That's just speculation.
Here we're getting into a difficult topic, because as soon as we say that all these Indians look alike to us, it's a sign of huge racism. And
listen, I'm not the one who said that. I'm not the one. What's his name? The Canadian, the Indian Canadian comedian, Russell Peters. He said that.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, he is very funny.
I should check him. I'm not familiar with him.
You should. He's on YouTube. He's one of those comedians that is still actually not censored.
Okay.
Russell. Write it. Russell Peters. No, he's very, very funny. He rips into Indians and Chinese.
Not Canadians.
Not really, actually. Listen to us. As we come in for a landing year, if you were to give me your prognosis, all right, let me rephrase it. Let me ask it to you in the way I ask my other guests. In front of you, there's a crystal ball. What do you see?
I really don't like the direction we are going, and it partially reminds me of the Soviet Union with all the nonsense there and bad outcomes. It was on different. It was about class. It wasn't about race or gender or whatever, but outcomes were still awful, and I don't want to to develop further in that direction. I really would like us to focus on more important things, because there are so many cool projects that can be done. Elon Musk has focused the humankind on space again. There are all these possibilities nowadays to provide a better education to people, because you have internet and you have computers and you can record things and show. So you don't have to have a wonderful professor in every university. You can just multiply things. The science goes forward immensely, and there are things to uncover and things to use to improve lives of everyone immensely. And instead, we just waste so much effort talking about these things about white fragility and so on. It's definitely not the future I'm looking forward to, and I would really hope to somehow affect it, to not let it slide that much in that direction. I don't think that I am able to prevent it by myself, but there are so many people around that are also not happy with what is going on. And I hope that despite us not being organized, like elites organized, I hope it might prevent this disaster, and we might get back on track and on our way to something wonderful.
If I were to find you online, then how would I do it?
Probably either LinkedIn or my email taras.kobernik@protonmail.com. I don't have a big presence in social media, but these two things that work for me.
Good enough. Taras Kobernik, thank you so much for joining me in the trenches.
Thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure. Nice conversation.
Don't go anywhere. My name is Germ. This is Germ Warfare, the battle of ideas.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please visit supportgerm.com.